And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 220. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. Today, I am interviewing writer-director Nicholas Acosta. Nicholas just put out a new short film. It's actually made its debut, its world premiere at the Dances with Films Film Festival. That just happened this June 25th. I am interviewing him to talk about this new film, The Pickup. The Pickup is a short about a Uber driver who unwittingly picks up a secret agent who has to deliver a package, and comedy and action ensue on this Uber drive. It is actually a really well-made, highly skilled, executed action short that looks very expensive, but was made for just $6,000. And I find that amazing. Like, if you see this film, I'm going to try to get a link or something to it to show you this film. One that I'm allowed to share. I know because it's on the festival, I don't know that I'm allowed to share it yet. But when I do, I'm very impressed with the quality of this. And it was shot for just $6,000. And that may sound like a lot. It is a lot of money. It's nothing to sneeze at. But for making a action comedy, something with car crashes and jumps and fireballs and a helicopter, it's kind of astounding that you could do that. So check it out. Check out the film if you can. A little bit more about that. It was shot for 12 days over the course of 9 months. They filmed without a permit in LA because it was during the pandemic. So the streets were empty. Notice all these things happened during the pandemic, like all these creative things happened that people were able to get away with. If nothing else, at least we got creative on this. I feel like I'm still interviewing people from pandemic era, like things that they made during the pandemic. And that's kind of lovely. I guess we should be getting the post-pandemic stuff soon, right? Anyway, Nicholas wrote and directed this. It stars Xenia LeBlanc from Orange is the New Black, who is also Acosta's wife. And yeah, I think it's just a 7 minutes, 51 second runtime. And Acosta does a lot of, he has a lot of shorts and he talks about how to do stunts and special effects on a budget type of show on YouTube. You can check that out. Anyway, we had a good time talking about making this film and how to do it. I don't always spend a lot of time talking to folks here about the process of the particular films because I like to get to my 7 questions that I ask them, but I did on this one. Okay. So check it out. I think you'll enjoy this interview. I had a lot of fun. You had a lot of fun. And of course, this is another co-podcast with my other one, Black and a Half. So whichever you're listening to, thank you. Thank you for listening. Whether it's Black and a Half or you're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein, thank you for tuning in. So right now I want you to sit back, relax, open your heart, open your ear holes, and listen to me with Nicholas Acosta from The Pickup answering my 7 questions. What's a question about? Has this aired anywhere yet? Is this no,
the screening on Tuesday will be its world premiere.
And where is that?
At the Dances with Films Film Festival.
Nice. Okay. I want to ask you right off. So I saw it. My appeal to watching it when they sent it out was like, I was like, oh, well, I was a Lyft Uber driver before I started this. So
yeah.
This story is, I was like, no, I feel like sometimes this is an action adventure about to start. I don't know what's going on in here. But I watch a lot of short films and get sent a lot of films of different qualities. And this is, I think, incredible quality. Like, just from from a technical standpoint, why does yours look so good? And yours is ultra low budget, right? Like it says $6,000.
Roughly $6,000 was the budget. Yeah.
Okay, which is probably more than. That's less than one of those cars cost. So how do you make the film look so good? Because I watch feature films that I don't understand why they look like a little like shot on a camcorder, even though I know they used film. I don't get why they look. So they always have this like low budget look. And I don't know what that is technically. That yours looks so incredible for such a small amount of money.
You know, it's so funny. I had this discussion with my wife, who, by the way, also has a film in the festival, which is really exciting. So we both have our films in the festival. And she's the lead. She plays Alpha in the movie, female spy. I once came to her or just had a conversation with her, just been like, I was watching this movie and it was a movie that it was just actually even just a trailer. And I just thinking like, God, what's this movie looks bad. And I did my research on it. I looked into it and I was like, maybe it's the dialogue. Okay. Let me just take off the dialogue. Let me put it to mute.
Yeah.
And it just looked bad. I was like, why does it look bad? The art direction looks good. Their faces when they're acting, because again, I turned off and I muted it. Their faces look okay. It's not like weird people. It's like maybe I don't because I don't recognize the actors. But no, I've seen movies where I don't recognize the actors.
Yeah.
It looks like a movie. I Googled what cameras they're using. They're using cameras that I would use or big cinemas are using. And I'm just like, the lighting is like, okay. It's like that. And for the longest time, it bugged me that I couldn't pinpoint what makes it not look like a movie.
Yeah.
And it scared me because I was like, if I can't point it out, am I making that same mistake?
Yeah.
Am I doing that in my movies? And then I ultimately just brought it down to one simple thing. It was kind of a couple things, like ultimately color correction kind of like was kind of like the one thing that I kind of noticed. But I brought it down to one simple thing that I kind of say. The thing that makes the different and aesthetics and why certain films look different from others and everything is what I call care. Some people, these filmmakers didn't care about a certain aspect of a movie. It's the same reason why when you see the Snyder cut of Justice League compared to the theatrical version, there are scenes that, you know, other than scenes that were shot by Snyder, you could see the scenes that were shot by Whedon and see the scenes that are shot by Snyder. And you can kind of feel it. You can know what shots were shot by Sweden. And I was able to see in the theater and like the scenes, like before we saw the Snyder cut, eventually I was like, okay, that was shot. This wasn't shot by Snyder. That's by Whedon. And it's like, they had the same crew. They had the same production team, everything like that. So like what same cameras, you know, they color corrected at least rough, the same to everything match. Like, why does it look different? It's because what Snyder cares about and what Whedon cares about are two different things. It's about character story and writing and all the dialogue and everything. Snyder cares more about visuals and the characters, but he cares more about the visuals a little bit more. It's not, now again, it's not that they don't care about story and he doesn't care about visuals. It's just that he cares more about this while this person cares more about that. And that's what I ultimately feel. It's like, it's not about like no one cares. It's about like of attention to details on things. So I really care about how my films look and how they're presented. I want films to be, I want people to have the full cinematic experience. I'm the one literally pixel peeping the frame being like, no, that doesn't look right because it doesn't. But so I care a lot about how things are presented, especially because I work at the CW as a day job, work in their consulting as a writer, producer, editor in their promo department. So I have to produce these promos that have to look like movie trailers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I work really hard being like, how to cut this, how to do that, you know? And I've looked at all those things with a very fine-tuned eye to kind of trying to get that aesthetic. But all that aside about care and getting a little bit, you know, crazy, the thing that I think makes them look like movies is like just the level of attention I just give to every shot. And particularly, it just like a lot of the things I learn are just things that you can learn online. You know, I went to film school, but prior to that, and even to this day, I still learn like tutorials on like how to do something. And then again, I just look at movies I want to emulate and be like, let me try to copy that look. And I do that. But ultimately, that's what I feel makes it look like a movie. What it is up to interpretation ultimately. So some people might look at this movie and be like, it looks terrible.
Oh, no, I think it's just it looks high budget. Like, and so I watch these feature films sometimes and I'm like, I can't understand either why does this look like I have a little like a Sony AR-3S or whatever that to shoot on. And I'm like, this doesn't look as good as my camera. And I'm not this is not super expensive camera.
A lot of people think we shot it on like Alexas or Reds. We shot it on a Blackmagic Pocket 4K.
Really? Oh, yeah. Nice.
And I'm part of this Blackmagic group that like on Facebook where people like, because everyone likes to make fun of Blackmagic. So I think I always call it the coping group. I just follow it because we're doing the Blackmagics.
Yeah.
Because maybe if there's like workarounds of things like that. But a lot of them are just being like, yeah, this camera is great. Like everyone's making fun of us. And it's true. Blackmagic is made fun of. I like the camera because it's a affordable camera that you can all like anyone can use. I try not to knock anyone's camera choice. To each his own. If that's what you like, fantastic. Have at it. You know, I don't kink shame when it comes to cameras.
Right.
So, but like I posted the trailer on the group and they were saying, guy, like, dude, stop lying. This was shot on Alexa. And I was like, no, it wasn't. And I showed them a behind the scenes photo and video of the moment. And they're like, what? And even they were like, okay, I thought I had to get a better camera. And I was like, and again, this is the praise magic group. And they were like, yeah, we know this camera is not great. And again, it's like, it's not the camera. It's the person who uses it. It's the time you put into it. It's the lighting. It's the lens choices. It's it's just kind of more taking the time to really like just find out what makes an image, a filmic image, like, you know, filming. And I wanted the film to look like it was shot like on like, you know, 35 millimeter Kodak, you know, Vision 3 film.
Yeah.
To look like that. So I did all the research on like grading things at a chemical level, but doing it digitally. So I that's again, taking the approach and time to look into this, like the presentation. Oh, it's got to look like this. You know, we got to make sure that the highlights are at that level, and not so much to a scientific level, but just more visually. Like, this is what they look like. I want my films to look like that. My goal was to make a Michael Bay movie on a budget.
Well, and I was going to say, I don't want to it's hard to not spoil a 7-minute film at all, but like there's an explosion. And I was like, well, I know he didn't explode anything for 6,000.
Or did
but I'll say I've seen some shows on Netflix that the explosion was not as good as that. Like that was a really, I was like that. I will say, if I didn't know that people were using special effects for explosions, I would have. And if I didn't know the budget on this, you could have tricked me that I think it looked really good.
I think what makes a lot of the bad visual effects explosions and on Netflix or just any movie and TV show these days is because they're doing it CG. And most of the time it's because there's these guys named called Corridor Digital. My buddies, they're my friends, Sam and Nico at their YouTube channel called Corridor Digital. They also have a website and a different one called Corridor Crew, but they have this YouTube like show that they call VFX Artists React, and they react like good and bad VFX artists, and they have guests and everybody come on and talk about it. They also have one called Stuntman React, which I highly recommend. But they talk about visual effects explosions in the sense where or CG explosions And it's this, and it comes down to this kind of mindset. It's like, yeah, a producer just hired this CG artist to work on this thing with millions of dollars to get this detail. And the CG artist is like, oh, I worked really hard on the element of this flame thing. So it's like, I got to expose so everyone can see every single detail. And it's like,
yeah,
but in reality, an explosion literally blows out your lens. You're not going to see it. It's just bright light. You need to expose it for that. So they just come off this really weird orange color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This film avoided a lot of our film, The Pickup, avoided a lot of CGI as in computer generated images. And we used more like practical effects in the sense of like how we did it. So first off, the explosions are real explosions, but they're elements composited onto an image. So it's stock footage of an explosion.
Oh, okay.
It's a real explosion.
And
by doing that, it made it look more realistic.
Yeah.
And all the car crashes are actually with toy cars.
You know, I thought I had read something on that, and then I'm watching it and I go, no.
Yeah.
But they had no. Okay.
All the cars.
Old school miniatures, huh?
Yeah. All the cars driving are real. But when it comes to like any stunts or dangerous acts that cars are doing, like exploding, flipping, or anything like that.
Flipping? That was a toy car?
Those are toy cars.
Like how big a car is? Like matchbox size? Like
1/18th scale. So about this big.
Okay. Kind of big.
Yeah. Die-cast models that, you know, all those cost like $1,000. So like, that's literally like, you know, the part of the budget right there. Almost like 25% of the budget right there had to go to the toy cars. And even the helicopter at the beginning is that's a toy. Nope. Yeah. So that we didn't have any real helicopters. We didn't have any cars to crash. No one was actually harmed. No cars actually were at risk of actually getting damaged or touching each other in a dangerous fashion. Everything was done. We barely even went like over the speed limit. We would go like maybe like a couple miles over the speed limit. We followed the rules of the road and just interesting camera angles and techniques to make us look like we were going faster and more dangerous than it was.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. It's a fun. Have you ever been an Uber driver? I loved your line. Does it lift? I love that. That was great.
I just got out of another interview, like an hour ago. And he was an Uber driver too. The interview. Yeah. And he literally said that was his favorite line too.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that line is killing. I was so worried like it wasn't going to be funny enough or like,
oh, no, no.
I'm not going to get this. And like, as I'm writing it, I'm like, oh, is this stupid? And everyone laughs at that joke. And I'm so happy. And a lot of the lines were not improvised. Everything was written. But like some of the lines that were done, because Adam and my wife, Xenia, who plays the lead character, assassin, I think I already said that. She and him worked really well off of each other. And so they came up with a bunch of jokes, like that whole sequence at the end where she gets out of the car. Originally, it was just kind of a simple segue to the end. And he did the whole like, oh, you forgot this kind of thing. And that was really funny. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do that. Like we were just rehearsing. And I was like, I'm going to write that in. That's a hilarious joke.
Yeah.
But the lift joke was one of my jokes. And I was like, oh, God, I hope that people find this funny.
Yeah,
I was really worried like this was like not going to be goofy. And the reason why we made it a comedy was because we never done this level of visual effects before, like crashing cars. We knew it could be possible. We'd seen someone do like a version of it. And we were like really impressed with it. We're like, we want to take it to the next level. We want to do it bigger and better. Or at least with our style, if anything. And I was so worried that the effects might not work that we decided let's make it a comedy. So that way, if it doesn't work, we'll just say that was the point. It was supposed to be stupid.
Yeah. Well,
but it ended up working and then made the comedy still work regardless. If anything, it made it even funnier because it's at such a level where you're like, what?
And
technically a stupid movie about an Uber driver. If you think about it, it's not a stupid movie, but like a stupid like concept. If you think about it, like a Uber driver has to get the super spy to this place. It's like, it's ridiculous, but it's fun. I like mixing the fantastic with the mundane.
One of the reasons I stopped Uber driving was because of an experience where I thought I was going to die. I thought the passenger was going to kill me. So
I said the same thing.
Oh, really? maybe it was the same guy.
He's in a he was the driver though. He said that he got out of a car once. He had a passenger where a guy, and then the guy saw his car getting broken into and he ran out. And then all of a sudden he heard two gunshots. And I'm just thinking like, yeah, it's like, oh my God. So you were Joe in that moment being like, is that a gun?
Yeah. Hey, the first time I have people on my show, there's a series of questions I ask them. It's the same questions. It's my world famous, Science and Science world famous 7 questions. And, that's where eventually I'll get a sound effect to happen. Number one, what are you most nerdy about? Like, and it doesn't have to be sci-fi. It can be that what's that thing that you know more than maybe most people about, or you are super into?
Movies in general. I'm the kind of person's like, I just came across it today. I'm not even a big Lord of the Rings fan, but I know more about like the making of movies than most people. And there's a video I came across today where it's like someone's watching because the two towers just got re-released or something.
Okay.
And then someone filmed themselves in the thing where it comes to the part where Viggo Mortensen kicks the thing, and everyone knows that he broke his toe during it. And the camera is like, and if you're in a dark theater and you see the thing, you're, camera goes into darkness, panning to a guy, and you can hear, and aloud the guy says, did you know? The whole audience, like, laughed. And I'm like, that's me. Like, I mean, that's me literally going like pausing the movie, like to my wife, like, okay, so fun fact, like movies, I am a cinema nerd. Like I love Back to the Future. I love Star Wars. I'm a semi-interested Marvel fan of like the idea of it, but not a big comic guy, but I love researching into it. As soon as like an episode of the Loki ends, I'm like, okay, let me go to the breakdown of like things I might've missed. Cause I don't read the comics. I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Oh, that is a segue from that one show or episode that I'm really into the idea of knowing how movies are made. My neighbors are filmmakers downstairs, and they just shot a feature film. And I was literally like having film FOMO, looking outside the window, being like, what are they shooting on? Cause I like that stuff. So
the making of movies is the fascinating
thing. Making movies, the stories. Yeah, I love finding out how movies were made and the details of that, and just movies in general. Like, oh, did you know that technically that character is supposed to be like that? Like, just movies. I literally live, eat, and breathe movies.
Do you look at how they're made before you watch it, or do you?
More so after, because I don't want to be, especially nowadays. When I was younger, I'd kind of like, you know, the new movie comes out and everything, I'd watch all the trailers, I'd watch all the interviews, but I was like, now I want to, you know, I want to be surprised when I watch the movie.
Yeah.
So especially if it's like a thriller or horror or action movie, I'd be like, okay, I don't want it to be ruined. I try to avoid spoilers. But then when it's done, I try to learn everything I can about, especially if I like the movie. And again, like I said, I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings fan. But I wanted to rewatch them recently, with my wife. So technically I hadn't seen them since they came out in theaters like 20 years ago. So I finally was like, I got to rewatch these movies, because even though I'm not a big fan of it, I understand the technical achievement of what was accomplished with these movies.
Yeah.
It deserved the Oscar because of what they did. So I'm watching the movie with my wife, who's a bigger Lord of the Rings fan than I am. And I've only seen these movies once in theaters 20 years ago, and I'm breaking down like, oh, did you know all this stuff? I know these things more than she does, because of all the things that I research and learn. Like, I didn't like even actively research Lord of the Rings. I'm just learning about, like, you know, the top fun facts about movies, and then one of them, Lord of the Rings, or some things that I came across being like, oh, okay, let me quickly, especially now with Instagram, where you can quickly like scroll and find out, like, it's interesting, it's fun. I like learning things, because it makes
When I was a kid, both PBS and HBO, they used to do a lot of the making of a movie before it was even released, before it came out. And I used to watch those because it was my first look at an Indiana Jones movie that's coming up. And they wouldn't show footage, but they would show how they were making these things.
I loved that show. There was a show called Movie Magic, which was really fun.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I always was the kind of person who's like, I got the DVDs and Blu-rays. I still get DVDs and Blu-rays because physical media is king. Because but particularly because I loved watching the special features. I want the Blu-ray more for the special features than the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I want to even, and nowadays we're not getting too much of that even on the Blu-rays. They're kind of like just like one documentary where they're talking about the overall. But while I'm even watching that, I'm just seeing like in the background, like, okay, look, camera they're using, one technique. But I loved all the little details. I would listen to commentary. That's again, that's how I became as adept, I feel, with filmmaking as I am, because I learned more from those than I did from film school. I learned from film school kind of etiquette of like, okay, this is a C stand, is what you do. You know, this is how you, the commanding a chain of all that stuff, you know, call action, everything. But I learned actually like techniques by watching movies and listening to commentary. Definitely being a movie geek is the thing that I am. I'm a movie.
My daughter's trying to decide whether she should try to go to a film school or just go do it. What's your vote?
It depends. I was making movies even before film school. I had been making movies since I was 12 years old. I think film school is a great way to network and kind of learn some etiquette a little bit, particularly depending on what school you went to. I went to LA Film School, the Los Angeles Film School, and it's very hands-on. And also they have associates and now bachelor's degrees. So I actually had an education. So I got like,
yeah. Okay.
That no one has asked me for. So
yeah,
see the point. But you know, it can be costly, and especially in today's like, just don't get your child into student debt. If you can do one thing for your child, just get them out. Do not have them get a loan. But if it's possible in some way, yeah, film school could be helpful. But also, you can learn half of this stuff by just being on set. Tarantino didn't go to film school. Look at him. You know, Rodriguez didn't go to film school. Look at him. They just created their own will of just making things.
Yeah.
Okay. So I feel it's like depending on what the kind of person you are. If you're a person who like needs to be kind of wants a learning environment, who's being taught actually a lesson and given homework to kind of like research, film school is great for you. If you're a person like, who's more hands-on and kind of wants to like learn on the job, but then be aware that if you make a mistake, it's going to be more kind of like, oh, that's actually has real world consequences because now you messed up the shot or messed up something like that. And no, you might want to get hired again.
Yeah.
There's that. So there's risks on both. One's financial, one's. But also, if you want to be a filmmaker, it's always going to be financially problem. If you want to be a filmmaker, let's be honest.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Food, ideally. I like In-N-Out burgers. I had one yesterday even, but I like good chicken nuggets. If anything, like good chicken nuggies, chicken tendies. But I don't know, that's a hard one. I just like these days, with especially with my wife, she's gotten me to more healthy things, and I really like sushi. Sushi's really good. I love having sushi with her like once a week, if not like once every other week at a great place that we go to called Kiku Sushi. I think it's like a tie between like sushi, In-N-Out burgers, and like maybe like chicken nuggets, depending on where we go or something like that. But a good burger.
Okay.
Especially I can't mess with the McDonald's anymore. It messes me up.
Yeah.
At our age, we can't hit McDonald's anymore.
Yeah,
especially when you start taking care of yourself, which I've been trying to do.
Oh, it's the worst. Your body rejects it so badly.
First you're taking it, you're like, oh, this is fine, and then you start like, you know what, I'm not going to eat bad stuff anymore for a while. And then when you go have just one burger from McDonald's, and you're like,
it's the worst.
In-N-Out burgers, which because they actually have healthy like ways of making it. It's like, oh, this is pretty good. It's like
standards.
Yeah, standards.
Their french fries don't have 17 ingredients.
Although the McDonald's french fries, I'm okay. Those are pretty good, but I try only so like good. Once in a blue moon, like
yeah,
in like 3 months, and like, you know what, I'll have some, you know, yeah. just the fries.
Right. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
Dr. Pepper.
Oh, I love
I'm a Dr. Pepper guy. I don't drink any alcohol just because just don't like the taste. So yeah. For me, while my wife, like, well, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get Sauvignon Blanc or Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio or something like that. She's like, oh, this is a good one. You should try it. I'm like, okay, yeah, it tastes like, you know, grape juice that burns. I'm the person who's just like, oh, this doctor, oh, that hit the spot. Oh,
yeah.
And it comes from the fountain. just like.
I directed a play, my first main stage full length play. It opened up, lights come up, and the play and the ground is supposed to be littered with pizza boxes and Dr. Pepper cans. The Dr. Pepper was in the play, she claimed that there was an ingredient in Dr. Pepper that like gave her the nerve to get outside for a little bit. So if she needed to get like laundry done, like she could go do it if she chugged some Dr. Pepper and got back in. That's the only thing that could get her out of the house.
I'm okay with Mr. Pibb, but I prefer Dr. Pepper because let's face it, Dr. Pepper didn't go to 4 years medical school just be called Mr. Pibb. Let's just face
it. That's right.
Facts here.
Okay. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
My style is very eclectic. I like all types of music. Again, I'm my day job is basically a trailer editor and promo editor for like TV and everything. So with that, I have to be very, eclectic in my choices of music because some shows might need this style and that style, but I like everything from classical, like, you know, Beethoven, everything, to like punk rock, to rock and roll, to even some modern day songs, a little less modern, because if you notice, by the way, in movies, when they're trying to like get like, okay, here's a big action sequence, we're going to be on the doing a big car chase sequence and everything, what are they going to put on? Are they going to put on, you know, Justin Bieber? Or are they going to put on some AC/DC, you know, like,
yeah,
notice what songs they use to advertise their movies sometimes.
Yeah.
Depending on the genre, there are exceptions, but a majority of people kind of also find rock from like 90s, more 80s back, more acceptable, and you know, it's more commercial to have those, while modern song is only can go to a certain audience. But I have always kind of had an ear for just like listening to anything that just I enjoy, but it's not just a certain genre of music. Rock is more so the kind of one I lean towards, particularly like 90s back. I'm a millennial, so I'm a kid of the 2000s who like kind of lacked a little bit of like, you know, Blink 182 and Green Day and everything. My favorite band is The Offspring though. So I really like rock, but I have like, I like country. I like this, just whatever sounds good to me is what I like.
I have this slightly ongoing gag where I like to put take trailers and delete the sound and put Sabotage under by Beastie Boys.
I did the same thing once. I did that in film school I did something like that with Sabotage, but I did something reverse where I took this the Star Trek, the first Star Trek, J.J. Abrams trailer music, and put it to Gran Turismo.
A movie?
Yeah, what was it?
Fast and the Furious?
No. It's the Clint Eastwood movie where he's like, "Get off my lawn."
Gran Torino. Yeah,
Turismo.
I was like, that sounds really close, but you're right, it's Torino. Not correct. But
it was funny how it lined up perfectly.
Something about trailers, because I did it to I think it was the last Jedi that I lined it up to. And it just cracks me because I saw it on someone else did it for something, and then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna start adding this into everything.
The super cut with the where they put "Don't Stop Me Now" by Queen in the Star Wars Rogue One, where Darth Vader like just mauls rebels and everything, because we're having a good time. I'm like, this is awesome. Same thing actually in Last Jedi. I think they put it in too.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Number five. What do you love to create?
Movies. But honestly, actually, that's a kind of more broader statement. But or this one's gonna be more broad. I like creating entertainment or things that people enjoy. I always say I'm an entertainer first, artist second. I'm an artist in the sense where I want to make something that, you know, resonates deep with people in some form or fashion. You know, we're talking about the movie The Pickup, which is, you know, it's an action comedy. It's not meant to like really have people go like, oh my God, yeah, the strife of the Ubers. It's not meant to do that. It's meant to
end. Yeah.
But it's meant to make you laugh and make you feel good. Like, so there is something there I'm trying to do. I'm trying to filmmaking for me, especially screenwriting, is what I say our job is to elicit an emotional reaction. That's the main job. And my goal is to elicit the emotional reaction in The Pickup to make you laugh and go like, whoa, that was so cool. And just give you revved up and hopefully inspire other filmmakers. But when I'm making my thrillers, I want to scare you and things like that. But regardless, it's all entertainment. I want to entertain people. I want people to have a good time watching my movie so much that they want to either go do it themselves or go see another movie or do it or watch my movie again. And so I really like create, but I also like photography. So I always like taking photos. So that's another thing. I want to move someone with my visuals in some form or fashion. But yeah, like I think just creating things that people like but entertaining is my goal. I even like how we're talking right now. I'm making my jokes. I like making people like making people smile, like having a good time with people. In a way that just makes people just like, I don't know, feel good. And like, man, like, yeah, I want more entertainment from you, you know, I want to hang out with you or I want to make a movie with you, that kind of stuff.
I love it. I love it. Okay. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
Not really too much into like, I'm not much of a gamer, believe it or not, you know. With my visuals of filmmaking, a lot of people think like, oh man, you must like play video games a lot. I'm like, no, I don't. I love.
Do you ever do board games? Board games?
That's what I was going to say. I was going to get into that. But it's like, I was going to say, it's like, I love watching like the like game visuals because I think they're really cool. So I learned from there. But so like video games, not so much, but board games, I think my favorite game, because I think it's like, it's one that keeps you on the edge of your seat, Jenga. I love Jenga. Jenga is a fun game where it's just like, okay, it's like everyone gets involved and it's technically the only game where it has one loser and a bunch of winners. Like depending on game where like you can have four winners and one loser. But like you can keep like, okay, next round and just keep bringing it down to this.
Is that why it hurts so bad?
I it does if you think about it. But like, I'd say like Jenga is one of my favorite ones, but like, there's different games I like. I like movie trivia games or trivia games. Like, there's a great game that you play in lines at theme parks. I always play Heads Up. That's a great game.
Oh, I love that game. Yeah, that's a fun game.
So that's a fun game. That's one I love playing at theme parks or like when you have time to kill, like in a line somewhere, or if you're waiting for something, or Jenga. I'd say one of those two games.
Okay. All right. Last question. Number seven, in 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
My work and how it, you know, people like connect with it. Like in 100 years, when people think about Spielberg, they're going to remember like the films that that moved them and like was like that inspired them or just entertained them. They're going to talk about Jaws and being like, oh man, I still can't go in the water because of that movie. Or E.T. Oh my God. I was like, I grew up with that movie. Like when he's, God forbid, and hopefully no anytime soon, but when he eventually passes on, it's going to be remembered. Like that's his legacy. I want to have a legacy where as an entertainer, a filmmaker that people remember and was inspired and hopefully has like a change in the lexicon of the world. Like, again, George Lucas, now because of him, we will say, may the force be with you.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, I would hope to have like a, be remembered for the guy who created something that's in the lexicon or made a movie that now is like, oh, you know, like Shyamalan with a sixth sense. Now everyone says, I see dead people. It's like, oh, I know. Something that can gather people together. Like, again, Star Wars. Yeah. People now, because of something he created from his mind, everyone gathers and talks about or even gets angry about because it's a group activity that was born out of fandom over something that he created. I hope I can create something just as good. Or, and again, if anything, like I said, just entertain and be remembered. Yeah. The fun entertainer artist that I hope to be.
That's great. I think you're on your way there. I think this film is, it's a delight. It's it's short, and I wanted to see more.
I get that a lot in my shorts. I get that. I'm not exaggerating when I say a lot of people always say from my shorts, like, I wish it was longer, which is a very rare statement for people.
But I've heard the best, you know, when a chef, like, what you want to do when you serve a dinner to somebody is you want to leave them wanting one more bite.
Yes.
Like, and so that way they're not like over full and like, hence all right, they should have ended.
Hence the last sequence of my movie kind of has like a little bit of being like a little teaser of like more to come.
Yeah.
And if maybe there might be a pickup too. Hopefully, you know.
Who knows? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Pickup two, food delivery.
Yeah. It's great. Well, Nicholas Acosta, thank you for coming on the show. And thanks for spending and answering the 7 questions, of course.
Yeah. If any of your guests would like to learn more about like how the movie was made and anything like that, they can check the film out on Instagram at the Pickup Movie, or they can check out my channel where I teach people how to do the effects that I do on my Instagram and YouTube, which are both at Unrendered Media.
At Unrendered Media.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I will be checking that out for sure, because I'm fascinated by all of that.
In-depth kind of like breakdowns of like how to do something on a budget, like how to throw someone out of a car on a budget, how to skydive on a budget. I do things like that. Oh. One, the video about how to crash a car on a budget, which shows how we kind of did some of the effects in this movie, has over 1 million views so far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's great.
And famous people too. I'm really excited about that.
I'll find old pictures that I took in like 1985 with a 35 millimeter camera that I had. And I have all these pictures of me setting up action figures with like doing some sort of scene. So like even back then, before I knew it, I was trying to create things like that.
If it wasn't action figures, it was me with my friends acting out a scene that we were imagining and playing. Okay, so you're going to come in here, you're going to blast us and everything, and being like, no, you're not doing it right. Like, before I even knew I wanted to be a director, and just like, no, you got to come in like you're like a dinosaur. You got to come in like that and be like, you know, attack like the Velociraptor did in that movie. You got to do it like that.
That's great. All right. Well, thanks for being here. And Black and a Half. And that was the interview. That was it. I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it? Let me know in the comments or whatnot. I always enjoy putting out this podcast as a simulcast or on its own. 7 questions. I want to interview anyone and everyone about this. Is there somebody out there that you want me to ask 7 questions to? Who you got? Who you got? Send them my way. Send them my way. I got a lot of PR folks in film sending me their independent filmmakers, but I want to hear from you. Like, who else do you want to hear from? Who you got the hookup on? I'll ask them on this show. So thank you for tuning in to You're Watching a Movie or Black and a Half, wherever you're listening to your favorite podcast or watching this. As always, my name is Silas Lindenstein. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for keeping it Black and a Half, and for watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play to rewind this. This speech shit is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with silence. Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This beat shit is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with silence. Yeah.